Oh, that mic was far away from me. Oops, sorry if that made loud noise. CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Ink Studs, the radio show where we talk about what, Colin?
Comics.
There we go. As Colin says enthusiastically with rage and...
Comics!
There we go, that's better. It's a lovely day, Thursday, about 2:06. Does that sound... 2:06, that sounds right. We're going to pretend it's right. Pacific time, because our guest, Mr. Bob Fingerman... is in New York, so it would be 5:06 Eastern time.
That logic works.
That works. Same world, different time. There we go. That's. I'll avoid doing any more of my crappy TV, movie, I don't know, announcer thing. I'll just make everyone awkward. Bob's latest books are Connective Tissue as well as From the Ashes. Was that it?
Yep.
I just read it earlier today, and I'm like, I can't remember.
The instantly forgettable.
I loved
it.
Ashes. You know why? It's because I read the PDF, which I don't normally do read PDFs, and the cover was separate, and so I just read the comic, and yeah, I'm waving my hands, making no sense. Bob, I'm very happy you've joined us today.
I'm happy to be here. Hello, you. Hello, Colin.
Hello.
For those that have been listening for Ink Studs for a while or not for a while, Bob was one of our earliest guests on the show, I'd say, up there in the first three.
So, really?
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was like our first guest was Seth, which we actually did before we started the show. And then it was like you and Mary Fleener, and maybe Rick Geary was later. I don't remember. It's been a while. Nearly 4 years. Well, probably 3.5 for chatting with you. But I'm happy you've come back to join us again. I didn't scare you off with our early rough tumble conversational quips.
I'm still here.
You're still there.
You're not hearing a dial tone. And I did hear you played out or played me in with Muse, so
yes.
Thank you.
Tell me about your love of Muse.
I don't know if there's much to say. I love Muse. We'll leave it at that. I think they're great.
Okay.
I like bands that are ambitious, and they are an ambitious band. And I mean musically ambitious. I don't know if they're ambitious in any other way, but I like the fact that they actually write complex music.
They reminded me of Queen.
They have some of that in there. They do.
Which is funny because you also really like the Ramones.
And I also really like Queen. So, actually, I was once saying that the best Queen song in the last 10 years was a song by Muse. So, there you go. It's the only one of their songs that I think sounds truly like Queen, but it does. Most of their stuff just sounds like them.
Mm.
I'll have to listen for more. I just, you know, something... I used to listen to lots of music, and maybe this is an age thing, or maybe it's just different priorities have changed, but I just don't listen to enough new stuff anymore since going to school and starting the show. Maybe it's I'm becoming too much of a comic geek.
You tell me, Granddad.
Well, tell you what.
I got a few years on you, but now I know exactly what you mean, because I definitely don't keep on top of it the way I used to. Now I just sort of find some bands that I like, and then I just like the hell out of them.
That starts about age 35, I think.
Oh, crap, I've started early. Now, the first book I want to chat about is Connective Tissue, the one from Fantagraphics.
Okay.
It's an odd piece.
It is an odd piece.
It's an odd piece. Tell me about the background of working on it, because I remember first seeing images of it online on your blog years ago. And how did that develop?
Not that many. I think, I'm trying to think when I started the blog, because I think I actually started that blog in 2008, so it wouldn't have been that long ago.
My memory is messy.
You're not listening to music, I'm talking to some senior radio station, aren't I?
Oh, come on.
Let's start talking about our medications. How many pills do you take a day?
Well, I got the blue one that helps with my bowel movements because the Raisin Bran just doesn't do it anymore.
Well, I'm down.
You're talking.
I'm down to 2 for the diabetes and about 3 or 4 for the calcium and supplements.
and we get a real answer.
Fine. Weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I wasn't. Okay, and I'm just checking just to make sure that that Robin's not completely... I started the blog in 2007, so there you go.
Okay.
You're right, I'm wrong. So it does go back, is the thing. When you're sitting in front of your computer, you can instantly fact-check. I started it September 22nd, 2007. So there you go. And the very first post, apropos of what we're talking about, with two drawings from, at that point, the inchoate version of connective tissue. So, yeah. So, all right. To go back to your question, I started doing this series of drawings not quite knowing where I was going to go with it. I knew I wanted it to be a book at some point, but I wasn't sure what kind of book it would be, whether it would be all art, whether it would have text. I thought it would have text, but I wasn't sure. But I just started doing this series of drawings of the girl, the lead character, Darla, just sort of going through her day, and then I started taking her down a weirder and weirder path. And some vague notion of a story was in my head, but I just wanted to do it the opposite way of the way that I usually work, which would be I'd write a story and then do the art. In this case, I wanted to do the art and then put a story around it.
So it was all
kind of a big experiment.
Was it ever going to be a comic?
No, it was never going to be a comic. I definitely didn't want that. And just the fact that I like words as much as I do, the likelihood of it being a pantomimetic strip with no words was pretty remote, too. So,
is that a word?
Maybe.
Pantomimetic?
But I'm going to get my fact checker on this one. Now, Darla, she is quite the verbose character, very well spoken for a young lady.
Yeah, well, I don't like writing. I mean, I only like writing dumb characters if they're the if they're the brunt of a joke. But I don't find reading dumb very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think pantomimetic is a word. I'm obsessing about that. I like coining words, but I really don't think that one.
It's your own version of kind of your own hip hop.
Pantomimic.
Pantomimic.
I added a couple of syllables. Pantomimic.
Oh, okay.
Is what I should have said.
Bob's word of the day.
Yes.
Brought to you by Inkstuds.
Yes, not just dull, but educational.
When I was reading the book, I noticed that she kept making references from everything from the Planet of the Apes to The Prisoner to George Groves and just this all these cultural references. And it made me wonder where you stood on the whole highbrow versus lowbrow culture wars.
Well, I figured, I mean, where do I go with that?
And only one.
I mean,
survive.
I made this girl work in a video store, so I figured she'd constantly be inundated with pop culture. So, I felt it was consistent for her to make these kind of references. Plus, you know, New York hipster chick, she would be well versed. But me, in terms of high art and low art, I don't really know what to make of that. Because, I mean, if anything, I think both of those titles are so self-conscious. Like, I know the low art thing is kind of I don't know if that's the buzzword or whatever mission statement of magazines like Juxtapose, where I guess they sort of skate between high art and low art. But, I mean, low art to me, I don't think that would be anything anyone should ever really aspire to. Because low art is different than commercial art. You know, commercial art has its reason. It's art being done in service of not just of commerce, but, you know, you're getting paid. Low art, to me, just sounds like you're not really trying.
Mm.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Or it's just, or it gets, I think, applied to stuff that, to my mind, shouldn't be called low art. I know they call guys like Todd Shore and Robert Williams low art, and I think that's kind of a load of crap, because, I mean, they're fine artists, you know? They have a great deal of craft. They think about what they're doing. So, I don't really know. I think those are both kind of high art, I don't know what that means, because I've seen a lot of stuff that has been dubbed high art that's total garbage.
Colin and I are on different ends of the spectrum of the use of the term high and low.
You tell me what you think.
Me, I hate the terms. Lowbrow bothers me to no end, because it becomes, especially making this all-encompassing thing for East Van. It's East Van and Vancouver separated East and West, and you get the idea of the different cultures. East Side's more of the poorer and
working West. Class.
Yeah. Not even working class anymore, because that puts in different other constructs.
Lower middle class?
Vancouver's a lot different now. Mm. We don't have the same class constructs that we would have 20 years ago, because it's an expensive city, and people are in whatever neighborhoods they're in. But it creates this idea of it's a class identity going with this lowbrow thing where we are doing dice on mirrors, and you don't aspire. It doesn't push you any further, I find. Mm. I think you kind of settled yourself within a framework, within a group of people. And to me, art, you know, it's all-encompassing, and it's multidisciplinary, and you push yourself. And with labels are good, like photography, cartooning. But low and high, it's you create, like, I guess, well, like a dialectic between the two. And
then you and I are in agreement.
We are in agreement.
Well, I generally look at the sort of highbrow art as being the very difficult ivory tower art, which, you know, a lot of abstract art and whatnot that you what's the word? Conceptual art that is totally incomprehensible to people who haven't got a fine arts education. And I think of lowbrow art as art that can be understood and appeals to a wider audience.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's a good definition. I sometimes wonder if art takes longer to explain than it does to look at, if the artist has achieved what he was trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it takes me 20 minutes to read the placard next to the art and 1 second to look at the art, I don't know if that's high art or just high-minded failure.
Well, I'm gonna completely shift the topic now.
Back to comic books!
Because, honestly, we could go on about this for quite a while and probably give people headaches.
Okay, back to the dunce cap. Off the mortarboard.
We are the intellectual comic radio show.
Yes.
I think we're the only comic radio show. Actually, that's not true. Robin Fisher does have the Onomatopoeia show out of
Montreal.
I forget which station it is, but it's their Sundays at... Oh, God, I can't remember. Sorry, Robin. One of the things about connective tissue, totally going in that vein of high art, low art, is that it's art, you're having fun. You want to draw a girl with big boobs and tentacles attacking her.
Of course. Well, yeah, I mean, the first and foremost thing was I wanted to have fun with drawing the art. So, yeah, I mean, that was a very easy explanation for why I chose to make the protagonist what I chose to make her. Okay, I'll make her a curvy, sort of pseudo-punky chick with, yeah. But with a brain.
But with a brain. Now, you know, just saying that, but with a brain, that brings on a connotation that you're going to be dumb because of that physical...
I'm just digging myself deeper and deeper.
Oh, no. No, one of the interesting things is your use of colors to tell the story.
Mm.
When did that come in for you?
I think it came in when I convinced Gary to do the book in color. Because I mean the book would have I think worked had it just been in gray tones, but I did the art, the bulk of the art, in sort of this sepia kind of look. And I didn't really want to lose that because I thought it gave a kind of nice warm look to the art. But I played with, since both it and From the Ashes are done in a monochromatic palette. I mean, they're printed in full color, but the palette is monochrome. I figured since they're using the four-color process, I might as well use that to some effect. So in From the Ashes, I use a variety of palettes of monochrome to depict either shifts in time or in setting. And I thought I'd use the same thing in Connective Tissue. Actually, I guess I did Connective Tissue first, so the quote real world stuff in Connective Tissue is sort of a in a cooler register, bluish, greenish gray kind of register. And then once she segues down the trippy rabbit hole, it goes into the more sepia tone, and actually even the page where she is kind of lurching from one world to the next, that page is both colors. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there are little bits of shorthand that you can use to kind of move the story. I mean, I also was thinking, I don't know why, but Wizard of Oz has been a lot on my mind lately, and though I didn't go full Technicolor, I like the fact that, you know, her drab real life is in black and white, and then, of course, you know, Oz is in crazy Technicolor. I didn't want to go over the top, but I like that idea.
What were you drawing with?
Just pencil. Oh. Colored pencil.
Is that fancy enough for you, Colin?
Well, I just thought there must be some complicated computer programming involved.
Well, I guess I was being too literal in that answer. I mean, I don't want to get into a whole shop talk, you know, technique kind of thing. But all the drawing was done just traditionally with a colored pencil, and then I did the tone work on the computer. But I used my own layers, which are organic scans of organic tones that I've done in charcoal and what have you. So I don't think it looks digi at all.
No.
I'm going to do a quick song break. What would you like to hear?
Talking to me?
Yes.
No, oh, not talking to me.
I sent you my little list. I can't even remember what I sent you because I did the equivalent of requesting those songs the way I sometimes order food in a restaurant. I just panicked and shot you the first four things that popped into my head.
I got the Eagles of Death Metal, Sparks.
Go with Eagles of Death Metal. They're always good.
All right. CITR 101.9 FM. We will be right back with our guest, Bob Fingerman.
Hooray.
Hooray. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, radio show where we talk about...
Comic books and graphic novels and related art forms.
You know, I don't actually like to use the graphic novel term.
Me?
No, I don't.
That's another term I'm not crazy about.
I just, you know, and I'm in school and all this stuff, and it really, it gives me the willies sometimes because it's like creating this another precedent of there's a difference. And I hate the term pamphlet.
And it's also usually, well, pamphlet's bad, but the one I heard recently, which I really don't like, is calling comic books floppies. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
I mean, could you come up literally with a more flaccid name for them? It's a business that already has low self-esteem, and suddenly it's like everyone, let's pick the most impotent-sounding thing ever. Oh, I'd like a floppy, please.
It's like a rejected Big Mac.
They should at least then call graphic novels stiffies.
Might help.
Can you see people going and asking for a stiffy?
I'd like a stiffy, please.
There we go.
I've come up with a great solution.
There we go. Available.
I'm not a team player.
Finer comic stores and strip clubs around the states.
Yes, stiffies for all.
Now, From the Ashes, that comic is like you realizing your dream in reality.
I'll put it this way. If the reality of an apocalypse was anything like my comic, it wouldn't be so bad. But I don't think there's a whole lot of probability of my apocalypse being the one that we would actually get. I mean, how fun would it be if all the idiots were gone and you just ended up with, you know, wacky mutants for friends? That would be pretty great, but I don't anticipate that.
Well, I haven't gotten to the wacky mutants yet.
No.
But they're coming?
They are coming.
They are coming.
What kind of shoddy, half-assed, unreadable post-apocalypse story would it be if you didn't get mutants?
There we go. It, you know, Dark Knight Returns wouldn't be the same without mutants.
Which?
Dark Knight Returns.
Oh.
Yeah, I shouldn't have even brought up Batman.
They're not that lovable, though.
No.
Mine, you want a hug.
Really? I mean, I've read the whole book, so...
The first issue.
Oh, sorry. Oh, there's more.
There's... Four more?
Six.
Or five more?
It's a six issue. It's a big, elaborate story.
It's a lot of floppy.
See, in a way, I think, actually, somebody pointed out on some message board that they thought that the cover shouldn't have just said number one. It should have said number one of six. Because they kind of wanted to know how much they were, you know, how much more story there was going to be. And I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Because I don't want people thinking this is a one-off. Well, that would be horrible.
I just had the PDF, so I didn't have the cover.
Ah.
They had it at the comic store.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Colin has a dial-up connection, so I couldn't send him the everything that came.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 1992 over here.
Don't hate me.
28.8 bits or whatever it is.
I think he's got a 56K.
56.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I love getting up more than a megasecond, so, you know, the internet's fun. From the Ashes, you're a lifelong post-apocalyptic fan.
Mm-hmm.
I remember chatting with you about your love of post-apocalyptic movies. Any particular greats?
Movies?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sorry, did I just make a pop in your ear? My phone just did something funny. Well, I mean, some of the I guess the obvious choice would be Road Warrior. That's a great one. But A Boy and His Dog, I think, is right up there. Delicatessen.
Mm-hmm.
Delicatessen's
fantastic. It's by the same guy guys that did City Lost Children and Amelie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So those would be three that definitely come right to mind. I mean, technically, Planet of the Apes is a post-apocalypse movie.
No!
So,
damn,
that's certainly a good'un.
A good'un. Now, this is beyond just a post-apocalyptic comic, Apocalyptus. I can't even speak.
Let's just call it a PA.
A PA.
We'll go with Mr. Bougie's shortened form.
Nomenclature?
It's kind of a very self-confessing autobiocomic at the same time, set in a wonderful, wonderful future.
Well, the wonderful, wonderful present, really.
That, or the past, because it says 2008 in
it. Yeah, exactly.
So what happened in 2008?
Well, I wanted to set the thing in, I mean, partly because I started it in the lead up to the 2008 election, but, you know, by the time I was midway through it, we already had a new president. But I didn't want to get into any of that. But I did want to have some of that just apprehensive feel as the election loomed. So it's more about the mindset than the actuality of the election. I didn't want to get into the whole McCain-Obama business, but 8 years of Bush certainly was enough to put me in a very apocalyptic state of mind. So I actually, the opening date isn't an arbitrary date, because the first page says September 17th, 2008, and actually September 17th is my wedding anniversary. So,
aww.
I figured this thing is both romantic, but there's, you can have a little bit of fun with dates.
It is kind of a testament of your love.
It is. It is. I'm very fond of my wife, so I thought it was time to finally portray that. But, you know, if you're going to portray something lovey-dovey, you might as well set it against the apocalypse.
I was just wondering, I mean, you say that you've watched post-apocalypse films and such, but the events of 9/11, does that change how you deal with that kind of subject matter?
Well, I mean, it influences it, and certainly there are discussions. I never wanted to actually come out and point a finger at any one specific thing for the end of the world in this, because I didn't want this to be polemical in any way, and I didn't want it to be... I figured if the world comes to an end, there's going to be, you know, for any survivors, there's going to be the question of who started this? Who made this happen? So there are dialogue sequences in this where it's all speculation, but there's never any actual answer, and I never give any actual answer for who done it. But there are references to September 11th, and fear of terrorism, fear of religion, religious extremists. I mean, the very first page of dialogue in it, I'm speculating, and I'm not saying whether I'm right or wrong, because we never know who did it, but I say, you know, how I think my character says something like, how long have I been saying the religious zanies would do this? And, you know, that's the first thing that I think, but it doesn't mean I'm right.
It's your gut reaction.
It's the gut reaction, yeah.
But would it be this?
Because it's such an irrational thing to have ended the world, and the only thing I would think would be irrational enough to do that would be religious zealotry, you know.
Now, what would have been your response 30 years previous?
30 years previous?
Yeah, say if this happened in the 70s.
I was going to say when I was a kid.
You're saying it's just...
The boogeyman.
The boogeyman.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean... I am 44, so 30 years ago I would have been 14, so I probably wouldn't have blamed the boogeyman or the boogeyman. But I wouldn't have blamed the Russians, I'll put it that way. I remember one thing my dad, who is a very well-traveled, well-read man, as a kid I never was afraid of the Cold War, ever. He said, if the end of the world ever comes, it's not going to be at the hand of the Russians. And I believed him, and hey, he's right. So it wouldn't have been that.
And now it's something else.
And now it's something else, yeah. Now, I mean, if it happened, if I don't want to take this conversation in too depressing a direction, but
that's,
I mean,
okay.
Because, I mean, frankly, my apocalypse is fairly of good cheer, but...
Frighteningly so.
I was going to say, but the real world apocalypse, if it ever came, I don't think it would be from any government. I really do think it would be some faction somewhere, and I won't even say any specifics because who the hell knows, but I don't see governments being that untethered, but I see sects, groups, et cetera, being that untethered.
It's like 24.
It is, you know, I mean, except less black and white.
Yeah. It's like reading a Steve Ditko comic watching that show.
It is a bit. Yeah. I gave up on it. I liked the first two seasons, and then I watched the third and said, I'm done.
Maybe it's different for me being Canadian and not so thrust into all the dialogue that they have within it, because to me it's just humorous, and it's like, ah, this is ridiculous, but then I know that a lot of people actually feel that way in the States, so I don't know.
I think context. That's easing up a little bit, but I don't know.
In time. In time. Now, was it nice to have to do a regular comic again?
Oh, yeah, I had a blast doing this. This is the most fun I ever had doing a comic. And so much so that I'm eager to do a sequel. Usually after I finish something, I think, oh, God, I'm glad I'm done. And I'd love to do a From the Ashes 2. We'll see if that happens. I hope it does.
Now, how did you get connected with IDW? Because it seems a little different for a publisher for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really happy to be working with a new publisher. Most of my work for the last, you know, more than a decade has been Fantagraphics or Dark Horse, and I think it's good to kind of go outside your usual, you know, I won't say the safety zone, but you
comfort
know,
zone.
It's good to work for a variety of people, get a variety of experiences. But IDW actually wouldn't have occurred to me because prior to their... Basically, what it worked out to was an old friend of mine, my friend Scott Dunbeer, who I've known for easily 15 years, maybe more than that, but only as a friend. He was an editor for many years at Wildstorm, and I never approached them because I don't say that with any editorial content. I didn't think my kind of work would fit their mold.
Yeah.
But then when he went over to IDW, I got the impression that he was brought on because I think of IDW as predominantly doing licensed stuff, you know, like Transformers and Star Trek and G.I. Joe and Angel and all that kind of thing. But I knew Scott was brought in to bring in new types of projects and to do creator-owned stuff. And so I gave him a call. You know, because what the hell? Just see. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? He would just say no. So I either called him or shot him an email. I think I shot him an email and I said, "Hey, I've got this idea for a post-apocalypse thing, starring Michelle and I." And he said, "Send me something." So I sent him. I had an outline I'd written up and some prep drawings I'd done for it. And 3 days later, he called me and said yes.
Awesome.
It was really quick.
It's nice that it's in a comic format too, like that it is an actual comic, not a floppy or a pamphlet, but an actual comic.
Yeah, and actually the cover's fairly stiff, so it's an almost stiffy. Call it a semi.
It's eventually going to be collected into a proper stiffy.
Yes, it's a semi, and it'll be a stiffy soon enough.
Just in case you have your children listening, I guess it's a little...
These are all comic book terms, kids. Don't worry about it.
We just invented a couple.
It's actually going to be in the next edition of Scott McCloud's ongoing...
Understanding Stiffies.
I was going to call it Rebranding Comics.
Or
but...
The Stiffy Revolution.
Sorry, you know, my mind. Yeah. My mind... It never strays too far from the gutter.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Luckily, we don't have the FCC up here, so...
Right.
We have the CRTC.
Yeah, but they're not...
I have not cursed once. Every word we've used has been perfectly good and clean and wonderful.
Well, you seem to have positive feelings towards Canadians. I mean, the one nice character in Connective Tissue is Pierre.
Oh, yeah. She's the only actual human that she has fond feelings for. She likes his wine and cheese breath.
Not all Canadian.
I mean, she you know, she likes little weird Larry Chindong too, but he does cause her more than a little bit of grief.
He's a tad creepy.
He is a tad creepy.
He's very creepy.
But I like the Canadian.
And if this plants any intrigue in your head, he shows up in From the Ashes.
Ooh.
Crossover.
Wait, wow. Pierre or Larry Dong Chin?
Larry Chin Dong.
Chin Dong.
Yep.
Sorry. So how autobiographical does this comic get? Self-referential.
Well, I mean, the fact that it's Michelle and I, it's well, they see, that's the thing. It's since I like to think I dubbed this term, maybe I didn't, or coined this term of speculative memoir. I mean, it's all autobiographical, but none of it's happened.
Mm. It's kind of like
except for the only stuff that is pretty much verbatim our lives is the flashback in the first issue, you know, with me doing battle with my hated PC and Michelle trying to do something as simple as get away from her office for lunch. You know, that's absolutely real, but other than that, the only truly real thing in the entire series is kind of our relationship with each other, you know, just our love for each other. But obviously everything else, well, not obviously, since you haven't seen it yet, but it will be readily apparent that everything from the end of this issue on is just flight of fancy.
Well, I'm looking forward to finding out what happens to the both of you next.
Oh, it gets deeper, darker, crazier, uglier, I think funnier.
There's not a lot of really exciting post-apocalyptic comics right now. The other one I can think of that I really enjoyed is Brian Ralph's series, which the title's totally drawing a blank from my mind.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I can't help.
It's a first-person like zombie-type thing. So you're actually like a character within the story, and it's really fascinating. I recommend checking it out.
I'll take a look.
If I can remember the title of it. But
Underground?
No, that's not it.
Oh.
But we are near the end of our time here, Bob.
Okay.
I've got another guest to bring on in a couple minutes.
Hooray for whoever that is.
Simon Roy, local kid, done good.
I wish him well.
He's got a stiffy. It's actually not a full stiffy. It's got a spine.
I'm glad he has a spine. We need more men with spines.
That's how it goes in the Ink Studs. We need more men with spines. Connective Tissue from Fantagraphics and From the Ashes from IDW. Both fantastic fun reads. The thing I really enjoyed about Connective Tissue is kind of like, oh, words. But it flowed. It was quick. It was really quick read, surprisingly, for the verboseness.
Well, I guess that's good. hopefully, it's a quick, enjoyable read that people will want to read again and again.
It is. It's fun, you know, and it's a journey, as any good book should be, right, Colin?
Like The Odyssey or Alice in Wonderland.
Well, Alice in Wonderland definitely was part of its DNA, so.
I don't know if The Odyssey would really be in there.
No, that wouldn't be so much.
I was just riffing.
Just riffing. Okay. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
And have a swell day.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye. And so that was Bob Fingerman. His latest books, like I said, Connective Tissue and From the Ashes. I'm going to do a quick song break, play another one of Bob's tracks that he'd like me to play. I think I'm going to go with the Lamb of God. Sound good, Colin?
Sure.
Sure, Colin's excited. We'll be right back. Ink Studs, CITR 101.9 FM, and we'll have Simon Roy with us when we get back.
I'm very particular about my metal.
Meddling with metal.
Warbon.